I have long been haunted by the story of Horatio Gates Spafford. If you don't know him, he's the writer of the old hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul." And the story behind that song, we've shared it from time to time here. If you don't know that story, it's pretty powerful. He was not a musician. He was actually a wealthy lawyer. He had a pretty big real estate portfolio. And he wrote the song in response to the tragic loss of his four daughters in a shipwreck in the Atlantic. His wife, Anna, and their four children were headed over to Europe on a luxury liner, and in the middle of the night, their ship was struck by another vessel. It did immediate damage to the ship. The mast collapsed. The ship quickly rolled over, and most of the passengers were spilled out into the ocean. Anna Spafford describes holding her two-year-old daughter in her arms and then losing her as the ship turned over, and all four of the Spafford daughters died. Anna, the wife, the mother, survived. And Horatio was supposed to be on that ship with them. But some work stuff came up, and frankly, his career was not going well. He lost a huge portion of his real estate investments in the Great Chicago Fire. And he was hanging on by a thread financially, and he decided it would be more important that he stayed and finish up some work, and he was gonna join them later, sent them on ahead. He was supposed to be there with them, and I just put myself in his place as a husband and as a father, and I wonder if I would ever be able to forgive myself for not being there. Even if there's nothing I could have done to change the outcome, it must have been so hard to forgive. He did get on a ship and sometime later to travel over to reconnect with his grieving wife. And there on that other ship, the captain of this new ship pointed out the place as they crossed the Atlantic, the place where the shipwreck happened. And Horatio Spafford looked out across the ocean at this place where he lost his four daughters. And in that moment, he was inspired to write the words of a poem, which later became a song that a lot of us know. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. And I wonder if I were in his place, how long it would take me to get to this place to be able to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. I believe someday I'd be able to get there. I'm just not sure how long it would take. And I think for a lot of us, the question is not if, it's how. How do we get there? To that place where we can look at tragedy and say, no matter what, no matter what my lot, no matter what happens to me in life, it is well. How? That's what this series is all about. It's called My Reemergence, Coming Through Stronger Than Ever. And through this series, we're looking at this ancient path that Israel walked on their own journey, leaving tragedy and hardship in a really bad way of life, coming into something new, and we're learning from them. Last week, we started with the first most important step, that is to acknowledge your loss, to grieve your loss. Remember last week, if you were here, you cannot heal until you feel, and we don't cut our losses, we grieve them, and you cannot grow if you do not grieve. It's so important that we take time to grieve our losses, and we all want to move on way too quickly from that. But the question that inevitably comes to all of us is, okay, what comes next? Even though we may all want to move on too soon, eventually we need to move on. We need to come out of that place of grief, right? We don't want to live there forever. So what comes next? What's the next step that helps us begin to reemerge? And this week, the Israelites will show us frankly, more of what not to do, what's not helpful on the road to reemergence than what is helpful. But nevertheless, we will learn from them. And this week, what we're going to see is after we've taken time to grieve our losses, and just a disclaimer here, for some of you, you may not be ready for this step yet. You can file this away for later. It may not be time for you. You may just need to stay in that grief place for a lot longer. But eventually, there will come a day where you have to do what we're talking about today. And the next step on this journey is to begin to reshape your mindset. We're going to look at Exodus 17, and again, we're going to look at more of what Israel did wrong that actually got in the way of their reemergence than what they did right. It was going to take some time for them, though, to fully develop a new mindset, and it may take time for you. So let the Spirit of God do with these words whatever he knows is best. Exodus chapter 17. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin. That's not kind of a bad label. That's actually the name. Sin is just a Hebrew letter. And some of you thought I was talking about Las Vegas, right? The desert of Sin. Not talking about that. It's just kind of a name. Traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So just let me show you what this looks like, kind of if you're a visual learner. So over here is Egypt. The region of Goshen is where they lived. They come out. They go to Ramses. They go to Sukkoth. They cross the Red Sea at some place, probably way up near the top. And then they plunge down into the wilderness of the Sinai Peninsula. They go there intentionally because there are no armies, there are no foreign nations, there are no bandits or bad guys in this place. It's a place where they can be safe. And it's been a long time since Israel felt safe. They lived under slavery, horrible, brutal taskmasters. It's a place they can be safe. The problem with this place is there is no water, which is why there are no people. I mean, pop quiz, how many days, how long can you live without water? Go ahead, shout it out if you know. Yeah, about 3 days, maybe four if you're lucky, but 3 days is kind of the normal. So yeah, they leave a bad situation in Egypt. They're in slavery. It's bad there. It's bad. But they come to a place where it's not all bliss. There's no water for them. Their situation is still pretty dire. So the text goes on. It says, so they quarreled with Moses, their leader, and they said, give us water to drink. And Moses replied, wait, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst? Now, there are two things I want you to notice about this. Both of them center around the word you. Why did you bring us up out of Egypt so that we could die here in the wilderness? First, I want you to notice that they make Moses the target of their complaint, their beef, but Moses is only the messenger. In this moment, they completely forget that God is the one who brought them up. God is the one who led them out. God is the one who delivered them. In fact, just a chapter before, they saw how God miraculously provided for them manna, this bread, because they were hungry in the wilderness. God made it kind of fall from heaven. They pick it up, they eat it. It's going to become their food throughout their time in the wilderness. Two chapters ago, there was another time where they were thirsty. There was water, but it wasn't drinkable water. And this is long before there are life straws. So God does a miracle and he makes the water drinkable instantly. So they had seen God provide for them in the wilderness, but they forget all that and they make Moses their scapegoat. Right? They put it all on Moses. This hard situation that we're in, it's your fault. Why did you? They forget about God completely. The second thing that they do here, why did you? There is no acknowledgement here of what they might be able to do to change their circumstances there. Which leads us to the first unhelpful mindset that falls upon us when we are in these places of loss that keeps us from reemerging. Bad mindset number one, I am powerless to change things. Right? Why did you put us in this situation? In other words, there is absolutely nothing that we can do. Now, I don't know about you, I was never a Boy Scout. Actually, that's not true. I was a Cub Scout for a few months, just long enough to win the Pinewood Derby and then to quit. I retired on top. But what that means is I didn't learn a lot of survival skills. So I don't know all the ways to find water in the wilderness. Here's what I can tell you. If I'm in the Israelites' place, I'm going to do whatever I can to find water for myself and for my family. But in this moment, that's not where the Israelites are. They feel like they're powerless. And if I'm honest, there are lots of moments in life where I fall victim to this kind of thinking too. I'm powerless to change things. I feel that so often about our world right now. I mean, I look around at the world. I look around at the state of our country. I frankly look around at the condition of humanity, and I don't feel good about what I see, but I also find myself immediately just going, but I mean, what am I supposed to do to make this any better? And so I'm thankful for Anne-Marie this morning just reminding us that although our voice may not be the loudest, our message is more powerful and more needed than ever. That's good for me to remember because sometimes I feel powerless to change things. Or I think about sometimes my work life. A lot of times where I'm just like, I don't like my work life. I don't like how my daily rhythm goes. Oh my gosh, it's another Monday coming. And then I remember, wait a minute, I'm the guy in charge. Like, I don't have all the power, but if anyone can change things, it should be me. And yet I feel powerless to change things. Now in psychology, they call this having an external locus of control. External locus of control. Locus just means place. And so there's this idea in psychology of when you're in a situation, just as you live life, where is the place of control? Is it outside of you? You know, is there some control booth somewhere in the world where someone's pulling levers and pushing buttons and they're in control of things, some bad actor, some nefarious character? And in our world, it's clear that this is what we believe. This is why conspiracy theories are run amok right now. We're looking at things that are going wrong and we're trying to find the blame. We're trying to find the bad guy who's behind the curtain, pulling the levers, working against us. We have an external locus of control. The place of control lies outside of us. And in psychology, they'll talk about having an external locus of control versus an internal locus of control. That means that I've got some control over what's going on. Now, for Christians, for a long time, we would answer this question about external versus internal with a simple phrase. We would say, God is in control, right? God is in control. Twyla Paris. Thank you, Twyla Paris, for that song. And in a way, that's right. God is the one who holds it all. We submit to him. He's all powerful. He's all good. But that does not mean that we are powerless pawns, just waiting for things to play out around us. Here's why. In the beginning, God made everything that we see. All powerful God created the heavens and the earth. He made us. He breathed life into us. And then he did something remarkable. He handed us the keys. He said, here you go. It's yours to take care of. I'm giving you authority. I'm giving you power. I'm giving you resources. You are not powerless pawns in how this whole thing plays out. And yet, ever since that day, we've been learning helplessness. And so there are these messages. People tell us we can't and we believe them. People tell us that we're small and we're powerless and we're weak, and we agree. And that's what happens with Israel, right? I mean, the Egyptian taskmasters had beat out of them any sense of agency or power. You're worthless, you're unintelligent, you don't have any value. For generations, they had heard these messages. Yeah, you can make bricks. Yeah, you can work hard. But if it weren't for us, you'd starve. You wouldn't even know how to feed yourselves. You wouldn't know how to do anything. And if that soundtrack plays over and over in your mind, you start to believe it, don't you? You start to learn helplessness, powerlessness. What about you? Is there a soundtrack that plays through your mind? And I want to ask you just to think about, what are the words that you hear that tell you that you're powerless? Whose voice do you hear over and over again in your ear saying those words? I tell you, it's not the voice of God. See, the thing is, the longer that we stay there in that mindset, the longer we hear that soundtrack, the harder it will be for us to reemerge. It's not impossible, but this is the reason that right now we're looking at Israel as a bad example. It's too soon for them to get a new mindset. This is why God is going to spend some time with them in the wilderness. He's going to put a new message, a new word into their mind. But here's what happens: as long as we believe this, every time something bad happens, we're going to fall into despair and we're going to look around waiting for somebody to do something. When the truth is, there is always something you can do. You can't change everything, but you can do something. Now, Paul in the New Testament, he's the guy who wrote most of the New Testament, he understood this balance perfectly. I want to show you what he says in a book called Philippians, chapter 4. He says, "For I have learned over the course of my life to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've lived both realities. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want." And then he says this, "I can do all this or all things through him who gives me strength." Now, this is a verse many people know. Some of you knew it, and you didn't even know it was from the Bible. And so often, though, when we hear Paul say this, "I can do all this," or "I can do all things through him who gives me strength," we hear it the wrong way. We hear Paul kind of as this, you know, all-powerful conqueror, and like, "I'm a superhero, I can do whatever, I've got all the power." But that's not what he's actually saying, is it? Because in context, you hear him saying, "Wait a minute, I've lived through times where I did not have enough to eat. And I didn't have the power to change that." Paul acknowledges that he has not always had the power to change his circumstances. He doesn't have control over everything that happens. And yet in the middle of that, what does he say? He says, "I can. There's still something I can do. I can be content. I can live in trust. I can do all this through him who gives me strength." Or I think about that other great hero of the faith. You know him. The little engine that could. Right? You know that story. I think I can. And eventually he does. See, Jesus, it's not just God in creation, but Jesus himself, after he died and rose and proved that he was who he said he was, before he ascends to heaven, he stands in front of a whole big gathering, hundreds of his followers, and he says this. He says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given unto me." And they're like, "Clearly, because we saw you die and you're alive and we know you have power. Clearly, you're the guy in charge. You have power and authority." And then he says this, "Now go and make disciples." He looks at them and says, "Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded." He says, "All authority has been given to me. Now you go." And these guys must have been looking around going, "Wait a minute, all nations? We've not even been more than 50 miles away from home ever in our life. You want us to go to all nations of the world and make disciples?" And Jesus says, "Yeah, because all authority is mine and I now give it to you." See, this isn't just the power of positive thinking, although there's something to that. It's more than that. In creation and then again in redemption, Jesus says, "I'm giving you authority. I'm giving you power. You have skills. You have abilities. You have resources. You are not powerless. You can." But the Israelites, they haven't heard this in a long time. They're not ready to hear it. So they go to Moses. And they grumble, and then Moses' response is this. Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They want water. What am I supposed to do with that? They're almost ready to stone me." Here we see both in Moses and the Israelite a second unhelpful mindset that often comes to us in a time of loss that keeps us from reemerging. Here it is. "I only see the negatives and the negative potential in things, in my circumstances. I only see the negatives and the negative potential in things." The Israelites, they see the obvious negatives. They're in the wilderness, not a great place to live. No one lives there for a reason, and they have no water. That's negative. They see that, but they don't just see the negatives of their current situation. They roll that forward, and they start to see the negative potential. Where is this leading? Oh, there's only one way this story's going to end. We're all going to die of thirst. And so all our kids, and so all our animals, this big tragedy in the desert. Moses not only sees the negatives of his present moment, he's got to lead a bunch of whining, grumbling people. This is not the job he wanted, did not sign up for it, did not apply. But not only that, he rolls this forward and he says, not only are these people difficult, not only are they complaining to me, but this is about to get out of hand. These people are going to murder me. They're going to stone me. See, in hardship, we all go there. The moment we're experiencing loss, it is only normal to see the negatives. And there's something right about that. And to see the negative potential, we just can't allow ourselves to stay there. And the reason we as people of faith don't have to stay there is for one simple reason. It's because we believe, we know a God who is always with us, a God who is always good. Which means that even when we're in the middle of really negative circumstances, we can acknowledge that, as we talked about last week, we can see the positive potential in negative events because God is with us. Or we could put it in the PPP, the positive potential possibilities. Even in a hard moment, we can ask ourselves these questions. How might this change my circumstances for the better? I mean, Israel's just like, this is terrible. We're in the wilderness. This is awful. It was better back in Egypt. What they're not asking is, wait a minute. How might this be a necessary stop on a journey to something better? God is taking them someplace better. He's promised that. They're going to the promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey, with lots of wells and water. So this isn't the destination. This is a stop on the journey to get from Egypt to the promised land. They've got to do some journeying first. So how might this change my circumstances for the better? How is this a stop on a journey that's actually going to leave me in a better place? Or how might I grow? What we'll see is that it didn't take very long for God to take the Israelites out of slavery. It took a lot longer to get the slavery out of the Israelites. They needed to grow. And negative events, hard moments, those are moments we can grow. What if instead of just saying, man, this is hard, what if after we grieve the loss, we said, but wait a minute, how might I grow? How might God be giving me something better through all of this that will help me become stronger, more faith-filled? Or how might I see God in all of this? The Israelites had already seen God do miracle after miracle. They're about to see another one. But at this moment, they're not asking that question. How might I see God come to my aid and change things? See, this is naive to think this way, to even bring this up. This may seem insensitive. This may seem dismissive of someone's pain or hardship. And it is, if you don't know, if you don't believe, if you don't trust in a God who is with you, who is always good, who cannot stop being good, even in the worst moments. And if you struggle with this kind of mindset, if you fall victim to the bad mindset where you see the negatives and the negative potential all the time, here are two practical things that you can do. The first is a gratitude practice. Employ a gratitude practice in your life. And I talk about this all the time because it's that powerful, it's that significant. Although I talk about it, I fall out of doing this all the time too. But if you start with just three things a day that you notice each day, different things that are good, and you give thanks for those things, and it's even best if you can share them with someone else, it's powerful in changing your mindset. Here's why. Because it's hard to imagine good things in your future, positive potential. It's hard to imagine those things if you can't even see the good in your present, right? Or to put it another way, if I can't start seeing the good things in the now, then I'm never going to be able to see the good things in my future. Again, Paul in Philippians, that same place that we just looked with, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. I want you to see what he says about this gratitude process. He says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever's noble, whatever's right, whatever's pure, whatever's lovely, whatever's admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. In other words, focus on the good, the positive in any moment. Practice gratitude. Now here's what's amazing about these words from Paul. He writes these very words while he's sitting in a prison cell. He's in jail, and you know what he's in jail for? Being a faithful servant of God, doing the thing that Jesus told us all to do to go and make disciples. He's done nothing wrong. And Paul could wallow in that and just go, man, look, I've just been faithful, and look where this got me. It got me in jail. But what does he say? It's even more important in those negative moments to focus on the things that are noble, that are lovely, that are excellent, that are praiseworthy, that are admirable. Because when you can see the good in your present moment, even when you're in jail, it starts to do something to your mindset, and you can start to see how, oh yeah, and so maybe even though I'm in a bad place right now, maybe God is taking me somewhere good. Gratitude practice, that's your first practical way. The other way is by acquainting yourself with the past goodness, the past faithfulness of God. That means going back in time and replaying stories of God's provision, which is why we're in Exodus right now, to see how God provided for his people in the past, or to think about your own story and think about, man, what are the times in my life where it looked so bleak and God came through? Or to hear stories from other people where they share, maybe they've been on the journey longer and they said, yeah, this is a story about how God carried me through. You ever wonder why in the church we talk about the cross so much? I mean, it's this much of a very big book, the cross. It's this much, and God's done all kinds of amazing things. Why do we focus on the cross? I'll tell you, because in the cross, we see first and foremost the goodness of God. I mean, who other than a good God would send his son into the world as a gift? And who other than a good son of God would willingly go to a cross and give his life for us? See, this whole war between us and God, this is not a war of God's creation. It's a war of our creation. We're the bloodthirsty ones who demand blood, who demand vengeance, who demand someone must die to end this war. And Jesus comes into the world with all power and authority to wipe us out. And yet he says, no, let me die so that you might live. Let me die so I can teach you a new way of living. Let me die so that my kingdom can come among you. Who else would do that other than a God who is good? See, in the cross, we see the goodness of God, that he would rather die, that he would rather suffer than see us continue to suffer. He's good. That's what the cross shows us. Not only that, though, the cross, you know what else it shows us? It shows us that God can bring positive things out of any situation, no matter how bleak. I mean, if you were standing there as an original follower of Jesus on Good Friday and you watched that thing transpire, there would be no way, even in your most creative mind, that you would ever be able to imagine Easter coming 2 days later. And so we remember the cross because we talk about it because it shows us the goodness of God. There's no question of his goodness. We see it in the face of Jesus. We also see that, man, God is a master at taking bleak, dark, hopeless moments and bringing out of them rich, positive blessings. And so if you're someone who struggles with only being able to see the negatives, always thinking about the negative potential of how this is going to play out, uh-oh, this is what this is going to mean, everything's going downhill, we're all up a creek, right? Gratitude practice, acquaint yourself with the faithfulness of God in the past, and it will begin to change your mindset. Now, one final mindset that I want to address, and you got to kind of look for it here. It's a little tricky. It's kind of hidden. The people cry out to Moses. Moses cries out to God. They need water. So here's what the Lord does. The Lord answered Moses, go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile. I'll talk about this in a minute. Staff's pretty important. And go. And I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. I mean, this is the truth, that wherever we're going, God has already gone ahead. He stands there waiting for us, especially when we're in hardship. He's standing there with us. He's walking with us, but he's standing there waiting for us on the other side. He's already gone ahead. I want you to go to the rock at Horeb, and I want you to strike the rock with that staff, and water will come out of the rock for the people to drink. So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel, and it happened just as God said. And so he called the place Massah and Meribah because the Israelites quarreled. That's kind of what these words mean. And because they tested the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? If you're living in the wilderness and you're looking for water, chances are you would look a lot of places before you looked inside of rocks. I mean, we all know there's water in rocks, but how do you get it out? And yet when you're living in a new land, when you're in a new place, when everything has changed, when your world's been turned upside down, it's time to look for the new, for new ways of finding water. We knew how to find water in Egypt. It was easy. You swim down the Nile and you took your bucket and you scooped it up. Now in a new terrain, there are going to be new ways, but the Israelites are not there yet. So we see this third and final mindset at play. I am unwilling to adapt. I don't want to adapt to the new normal. I liked it better the other way. I don't want to change because I don't feel like I can change. I can't change. Go back to powerlessness, right? I'm powerless to change. Or maybe I just don't want to change. I don't feel like I should have to. I've changed enough in my life. I'm to the place in my life where I feel like the world should change around me, frankly. I shouldn't have to change. Or I don't want to develop new skill sets. Or I don't want to look for new ways of doing things. I don't want to adapt. On the flip side, though, if we're willing to adapt, if we're willing to change, to be flexible, that's the key to not only survival in a new place, but that's the key to joy. See, here's the thing. Whenever you've lost something significant, a person, a relationship, a way of life, you've lost the place that you call home, you've lost purpose, you've lost a job, you've lost community. Whenever you've lost something significant, it's exactly like this. Suddenly you're living in a new, inhospitable land. And the terrain is different. And it's inhospitable. It's dry. It's dusty. It's ugly. It's scary there, isn't it? Because people speak a new language and there are new customs and there are new ways. And you feel, when you find yourself in this new terrain, you feel scared, you feel confused. You experience maybe culture shock. You feel homesick. Even if home wasn't particularly great, right? At least you knew what to expect there. But after a while, here's what happens in a new place. Life can be joy-filled again. Learning new things is actually fun, isn't it? It's intimidating, but it can be fun. And change, even though we don't like it, it is the spice of life. And growth, man, growth is enjoyable. And challenges, they are just opportunities to see God work in new ways. See, ironically, for the Israelites, they're in this place. They don't know where to get water. They don't like it here. They knew what to expect in Egypt. They don't know what to expect here, and it's scary. But in Moses' hands, ironically, he holds this staff that God had been using to do miraculous things for a while. You know, touch the Nile, and all of a sudden it turns to blood. Raise the staff, and the Red Sea parts. Throw it down on the ground. It turns into a snake and scares Pharaoh. I mean, all this stuff that God had been using the staff for. Moses, he's in a new place, doesn't know what he's doing, but he still holds the staff in his hands. And before him are these dry, rocky, craggy, dusty, you know, hills, cliffs, and they're in the middle of the desert, and that's all he can see is this dry thing. But here's what God is about to do. He says, I want you to take this staff that has been a instrument of my magical, miraculous power before, and I want you to go to those rocks that appear to be lifeless and dry and crusty, and I want you to strike the rock, and I'm going to do something amazing, and I want you to see what it might look like, what God did. Now, this is a place in the Holy Land, kind of in this wilderness region, and there's this phenomenon that happens where water comes from a long way off, runs through these underground caves and caverns, and it runs off, and suddenly these rocky, dry things in the middle of the desert from time to time discharge these fountains of water. I don't know if this is the exact place, but can you imagine being the Israelites, and you're there, and you're dying of thirst in this dry land, and suddenly that happens, these waterfalls of life come flowing out of the rock. It must have really challenged their thinking, right? Hopefully it also built their faith, but it must have been a reassurance to them that, hey, it's okay, you're gonna have to adapt, but as you're willing to adapt, you're gonna find new and better ways of living. You are gonna see God in new ways. I gotta ask you, over the last 5 or 6 months, I know, I just catch myself saying, I don't like it this way, I wanna go back. But maybe God is trying to take us forward. Maybe going back to the way life used to be is the worst possible thing that we could imagine. Even though it wasn't that bad, maybe God has something better waiting for us. And maybe if we're willing to adapt, we will discover new and better ways of living. And not only that, we will see God move in new ways. See, after we take time to grieve, if we can begin to reshape our mindset, I said these negatively, but let me just show you these quickly positively. If we can say, I have power to change things, I don't have the power to change everything, I can't change my circumstances, but the power of God, the Spirit of God lives inside of me. I've got power to change things, even if it's just my attitude, and I can be content. If we can say, I notice the good, even when life is bad, I can see the good, and I see possibilities and positive potential, even in negative things, because I know there's a God who's with me who's always good, and he's a powerful, miracle-working God. And so I'm willing to adapt and to try new things, because as I adapt and try new things, I may learn new and better ways of living that take me into a life and existence that's better than what I left behind. And not only that, when it's all said and done, I will have seen the goodness and the power of God in a whole new way when you reshape your mindset. Let me pray. God in heaven, I acknowledge that I find myself wanting to ridicule the Israelites for their lack of faith, for their negativity. I acknowledge, though, in reality, I'm not much different. I have seen your glory, and I've seen your power and goodness. And yet it's so easy for me to stay in those unhelpful mindsets that only see loss, only see challenge, only push against change. And God, first for that, I pray for your forgiveness. You've shown me, you've shown us, many of us in this room, so much about your goodness, and you've carried us through so much. God, I pray you'd forgive me, forgive us for not taking those things into account. But Father, I pray today that you would do something else, that you would breathe into us your Spirit again, your life-giving Spirit. Baptize us in your Spirit again today, that our minds might be renewed, that we might realize that the same Spirit that lived in you now lives in us. We're not powerless ever. That we might look for the good, the things that are beautiful and noble and excellent and praiseworthy, even in negative things, and that we might not dwell on how horrible things are going and fall into fear-mongering, and instead that we might believe and trust that you're always working things out for the good of your loved ones. And God, by your Spirit, give us the willingness to adapt, to be flexible, to change, to discover new ways of living, not to idolize the old ways, but to let you do a new thing and to teach us about new ways of living, and not only new ways of living, new ways of seeing your activity in our lives and in our world. Father, we need your Spirit today. So baptize us in your Holy Spirit, that even when we look at desolation and dust, in places where there are no life, we might be filled with faith and trust and a mindset that says that these negative, dry, desolate situations are ripe for your miraculous hand to bring forth beauty and life. God, I can't get there on my own. I need you. We need you to change us, and we invite you to.
In Jesus' name, amen.